Hello and welcome to the Majlis, Ready for Your Freedom Liberties Current Affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Ready for Your Freedom Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. Kyrgyzstan is headed to a very crucial and a highly consequential election and referendum in which not only people will choose the nation's new president, but they will also decide on the shape of new constitution, therefore the structure of the new government. The crucial date is January 10th, and as we all know, this election follows eventful weeks in Kyrgyzstan where we had the election results thrown out, government de-seated, and the sitting president forced to leave the office. And perhaps more importantly, a person forced himself out of jail, grabbed all the powers, and now leading the nation to an election and constitutional referendum while he himself is a candidate. Of course, we are talking about Sadr Japarov. Now, what's at stake here as the country headed to take some of the most consequential decisions? What the current political atmosphere look like? And what does it tell us about what's coming next? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Gulnora Toraliyeva, member of the opposition political party Birbol, who has contested in the last election, the outcome of which, as I said, was cancelled. And now Gulnora is joining us from Bishkek as a political observer. We are also joined by Bakit Bashimov, professor of global studies and international relations at the Northeastern University, formerly a high-profile politician in his native Kyrgyzstan with roles including as the deputy chairman of Social Democratic Party of Kyrgyzstan, member of the parliament and Kyrgyz ambassador. Kasiyat Ismanova, communications chief of a Bishkek-based opinion survey agency, Central Asia Barometer. Kasiyat is also joining us from Bishkek. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Ready for Your Freedom Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Uwazi. Bruce is joining us from Prague. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today. So let me start with you, Gulnara. How's the election campaign going on in Kyrgyzstan? Anything striking? Anything different? Anything noteworthy?
It's coming in very interesting way. Mm-hmm. This time, I think that it's obvious we have like a leading candidate, and it's obvious also from the PR materials across the streets and cities that it's a lot of visibility of one candidate, a lot of airtime for one candidate. So, and the other candidates, I think, are not are going so intensively and aggressively. And it looks like, from the PR point of view, that we really have one visible candidate now, too. And comparing to maybe parliamentary elections, I don't see such intensity now. It looks like a very slow campaign, actually.
You know, I don't have to remind people, the candidate you were referring, Gulnara, is obviously Sadr Japarov, right?
Yeah, absolutely, exactly.
Other than him, who are the other candidates?
Actually, we have a lot of candidates for now, and I have segmented them recently. And I think we have one of his major opponents, who is Adahan Mudumarov, and he is actually playing at the same field. So it's more conservative part of the, let's say, regional population, people living in villages and small cities, and more conservative, more, let's say, less progressive, yeah, in a sense. And we have several candidates in the opposition bloc, and there are plenty of them, actually, but as for the, let's say, strongest, yeah, there are Abdil Sagizbayev, who was previously one of the head of law enforcement here in Kyrgyzstan during Atambayev's time. Also, Bakit Kalmamatov, who was, if I'm not mistaken, he was a member of parliament. Klara Soronkulova, who is actually now also the head of Reforma political party. This one is built by progressive young people and maybe more like liberal views people. And I think that we have like moderate segment, if I can say so. Like we have three people who are from business or from have more economic background. It's Eldar Bakirov, Ayman Kasenov, and they're actually not oppositional, and they're not well known in the villages and remote parts of Kyrgyzstan. So there are three segments, and but I think that the major competition will help. Happened between Sadr Japarov and Adahan Mudumarov.
Interesting. And your party is not contesting this election, right, Birbol?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Actually, we haven't had any official gathering to discuss this. I mean, the political council. But I guess that one issue is that you should really have a strong candidate, to offer. Another one is that you should have resources also, because I think that this election is different, or maybe it's the same in a sense that most of the candidates, they are not really trying to win, and they are not really trying to compete, and they have some other ultimate goals. Some of them just want some legal protection, others want more visibility, others want to have some bargaining power on other positions, ministries or whatever.
Wow, Bakit, you know, you are far away from your native Kyrgyzstan, but you are very much in contact with people on the ground, and you are very much, you know, insightful in your comments about this. So we heard Gulnara speaking about these various candidates. Of course, one candidate leading the entire campaign in terms of the visibility, in terms of the publicity, in terms of the media coverage and all these stuff. So how do you see this political atmosphere as we are headed to this election? Are we expecting a genuine competition? Are we expecting any surprises? How you read it?
I think that the situation in the country is stable, and it's turning in the interest of a main candidate, Sadir Japarov. And if you would like to understand the sources of popularity of Sadir Japarov and those who can present him a serious challenge, and I think it is Adakhan Madumarov, we need to go not to the mainstream media, but to the social network like Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And here we can see a very interesting picture. Large number, it's hundreds of thousands of rural population, mostly from rural and labor migrants, they are supporting Sadir Japarov and to some extent Adakhan Madumarov. Actually, these both candidates, they are sharing the same electorate. It's a rural people with own understanding of the situation in the country. They are from a traditionalist and religiously conservative society. And the city dwellers, the progressives, they are a tiny minority, and they will not determine and cannot determine the outcomes of these elections. And that's why I think to some extent I see that Adakhan Madumarov can present challenge, but I think that according to some very serious indicators, as the popularity, financial resources, and power capacity, and the ability to influence to the large part of electorate, I think Sadir Japarov today is number one. And I don't see in a future, in a near future, any surprise.
When I was asking that question, Bakit and Gulnara, you can also jump in here. There were two points in my mind. One is, as we speak, Kyrgyzstan's election commission is looking on a complaint about Sadir Japarov using government resources in favor of his election campaign. That's one thing. The second thing is, both Gulnara and Bakit, you both of you spoke about Madumarov. And as we speak, he is also claiming that his supporters are threatened, in especially in regions. I mean, what I'm saying is, like, are we seeing a kind of a different version of the scenario which we witnessed in the last election?
Yes, they took into account what happened before them, and that's why they tried to avoid, and they are today becoming more flexible, and they are more skillful in manipulation of public opinion. But they are using the same administrative resources. And of course, we don't know the financial resources of Sadir Japarov, but beginning of this campaign shows that he has enough financial resources to be very competitive and to win this election.
Well, what do you think about this? I mean, are there, like, the complaint that's being looked at the moment by the election commission in Kyrgyzstan, are you expecting any surprise from there? I mean, the complaint is about Sadr Japarov using the administrative resources in favor of his political campaigns. And also the other claim by Madumarov saying that, you know, his supporters are threatened in regions.
Yeah, actually, today there was also a revision of complaint in the Constitutional Court. It was Klara Sorunkova, another candidate, who brought a case against Sadr Japarov. And her claim was that he cannot actually run for elections because he was before the acting president. Mm. And by constitution, our acting president, they can't run for elections. Another issue was brought also by, I think the public concern is more not about the wrongdoings themselves, but they did understand that there is a huge chance that he will be elected, and that's why they are very concerned about his understanding of the culture of spending public money and using public resources. Yeah, it's becoming more evident that he is living in the residence, in the president residence, but he's not actually a public official at all now. So, and also our media now is doing a lot of investigations on him using public guards from our law enforcement in the branded costumes of Sadr Japarov. So they're actually participating in the campaign, but they cannot as law enforcement officers. So I think that it's evident that there will be use of administrative resource because looking at this, let's say, small details, So it's becoming more evident that there is no understanding that public money should not be spent like this. We see that there is no sensitivity, you know, in these issues.
Are you expecting anything, any surprise from the Election Commission as they are looking at the complaint now? I mean, I don't know what that could be, but what's your expectation?
Looking at the members, it's usually one or two people who vote properly, let's say, or following the law. Mm. It's just one or two members, but you know, the decisions are taken jointly with other members and usually in favor of those in power.
Okay, terrific. Let me bring you in, Kasiyet. You are the number person here, as the representative of a public opinion survey agency. So we kind of understand from Bakit and Gulnora's points that there's one leading candidate, but there might be some challenges coming from Madumarov against him. And besides these two candidates, there are a couple of more candidates in the field. So what does the numbers tell us? How those candidates are performing?
Okay. For that, in order to learn that, we initiated our own public opinion survey in Kyrgyzstan. It took place in the mid-December. Mm. Now fieldwork stage is completed, but we are not done with the waiting yet.
Right.
So I think that on Monday we are going to see a clear picture. In the survey, we asked people questions like, which politicians in Kyrgyzstan do you trust the most? If the presidential elections took place today, which candidate would you vote for? Do you support the holding of the referendum on changes to the constitution? Do you want Kyrgyzstan to be presidential or parliamentary republic? So these kind of questions.
Okay. Bruce, let me bring you in here. I asked this question to both Bakit and Gulnora. Also wanted to take your opinion about the Madumarov's claim that his supporters are threatened. I mean, this kind of reminds me of sportsmen, the type of supporters who really ended up playing a crucial role in Jabarov's elevation to power following the last election episode. So how widespread this threat is, the claim of threat is, as we headed to the elections?
Well, I only remember Madumarov speaking specifically about the Issyk-Kul region. You know, and of course, that's where Japarov is from. So it wouldn't be surprising. You know, it's not new to Kyrgyzstan that something like this would happen. You know, I was there for the 2015 campaign for parliament, for instance, and it wasn't there. It was really interesting that wasn't a problem. But certainly, you know, when Akayev was president and when Bakiyev was president, there were places where other candidates not from their party or not supporting the specific leader or something were not warmly welcomed, at the least, because that was one of the questions I was asking when I was there in 2015, was, do you have problems? Because there used to be a lot of problems. Could you get a meeting hall? Could you venue that you could meet with voters? And a lot of times they couldn't get official permission for these kind of things. You know, it's the fact that there are some individuals around there that might look kind of menacing. You know, again, it's nothing new. It might be more pronounced. And like I said, I don't think it was a big feature of the 2010 presidential elections. 2011 presidential election or the 2010 and 2015 parliamentary elections, but it was there in the past. You know, so like I said, I'm not surprised. The only region I can remember him talking about, Madamarov, that is, was Issyk-Kul. And like I said, you would figure, since that is Japarov's native region, that that would be a place, you know. Madamarov's from the south, you know, so he's trying to go into Japarov's base area in the north. So I wasn't totally surprised. I'm unhappy, you know, and displeased, obviously, that there was objections and they couldn't, there wasn't enough, whatever, law enforcement or something to explain to people that whether you like him as a candidate or not, he has a chance to speak because that's the law.
Yeah. You kind of hinted into a south-north kind of question. I was also wondering, since Jabarov is the leading candidate and Madamarov might be in a position to offer some challenge, and there are a number of other candidates in the field too, but is there any way to differentiate their plans from each other? I mean, when you compare, let's say, two leading candidates, Madamarov and Jabarov's programs, their plans, is there any way to differentiate it, one from the other, in terms of what they are promising, what they are going to mean in case one of them ended up being elected?
Well, this question is better answered by our panelists from Kyrgyzstan. But yes, I would say, you know, briefly, a vote for Madamarov, at least the constitutional changes that he wanted and stuff, is basically a vote for an authoritarian leader. Madamarov, we assume, is a little more liberal and more inclusive with his idea of how a government should work.
Let's take, Gulnora, your point, and Bucket, also, you know, feel free to jump in terms of what I'm trying to understand is, yeah, Kyrgyzstan always had a crowded, candidates field, but what makes them differentiate from each other in terms of their plans, in terms of their projects for the country?
The campaign started just 3-4 days ago, and not all of the programs are published yet. I am actually watching all the interviews so far. You know that I don't think that they are differentiated. The only thing which makes a difference is this constitutional reform, which is promoted by Sadir Japarov, who is trying to force the presidential form of the government. Yeah, and as for the other issues, historically, Adahan Madumarov and Sadir Japarov had strong support from the labor migrants living in Russia and Kazakhstan. So I see that they are trying to communicate to them differently about the creation of jobs and about getting back most of the migrants. And what is interesting is that even these liberal views candidates, conservative candidates, and more even nationalist candidates, they have more or less similar vision, and it's all about creating jobs, improving business environment, attracting investments, and actually the programs of Klara Sorunkulova and Ravshan Jeenbekov are really close to each other. Yeah, so it's more about strengthening democratic institutions, more about direct elections of mayors and other local authorities. Yeah, so as for others, I think, for example, some of the opposition candidates like Bakit Kalmamatov and Abdil Segizbayev, they are more building on their oppositional views to Sadir Japarov.
Okay, terrific. Kasiet is just sending me a message saying that she has... Kasiet, please jump in. You know, it's kind of free-flowing discussion. You know, don't wait for me to invite you. Just jump in.
So now I would like to share some insights from our longitudinal survey that we conduct in all Central Asian countries from 2017, twice a year. I have 2 points. First of all, the change in public opinion towards Sadir Japarov happened really drastically. For example, in June, July, 37% of people didn't know whom to vote for on parliamentary elections, and 34% of people said that they would vote for nobody But in October, wave that we conducted, 76% of people said that they went to polling stations and they did cast their vote. In the preliminary data that I have now of our this precious survey that we are conducting on the upcoming presidential elections shows that Japarov has an overwhelming support across all social groups and regions in Kyrgyzstan. So this change happened really drastically and suddenly. Second point that I would like to share is that these protest moods in public opinion, they were growing from 2018. And for example, in spring 2020, Abulgazim's job approval, this is the former prime minister, was 5%. So just 5% of the population said that they support him. And Baronov's support and job approval was 5.2%. 47% of people said that corruption has gotten worse since the last year. In comparison, in Kazakhstan, only 27% of people said so. Mm. And in Uzbekistan, 9% of people.
Right. Kasia, thank you. Thank you very much. These numbers and surveys remind us really what people have in mind heading to the election. So also Bruce, you know, what Kasia spoke about is the people's concern about corruption. This brings me to another really important question, which was very relevant in the latest elections in Kyrgyzstan. Of course, the context is kind of different, given here we are talking about the presidential elections, while the last polling was about the parliamentarians with so many candidates. But we might be able to draw some comparison, Bruce, when we speak from the perspective of political parties competing in this election. So what I am trying to lead you is players behind the candidates, behind the elections, like the type of which we have seen in the case of Matt Raimov in the previous elections. Are we seeing any background players like him as we are headed to the elections in Kyrgyzstan?
Well, certainly he's getting help. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it doesn't hurt that one of his close friends is Kamchibek Tashiev, who's well known and well connected throughout Kyrgyzstan. Now, as far as the Matraimovs, you know, I mean, they were almost everyone thought that they were the ones that were funding the Mekonim Kyrgyzstan party in the parliamentary elections. And of course, that party did very well. But there were weeks before the election, there were allegations that that party was offering bribes to people and, you know, to cast their vote for the Mekonim Kyrgyzstan party. You know, you'd have to say that Raimbek Matraimov, you know, the former deputy customs service chief, is an influential figure in Kyrgyzstan. He's been detained briefly, you know, but he's still kind of free. He's not supposed to leave the country, but otherwise he's kind of free to roam around. You know, he seems to be staying in the Bishkek area. He promised he would return money, although it was unclear why he has to return money. The officials vaguely talk about some anti-corruption campaign and then say he's going to return 2 billion som without explaining why exactly he has to return the money. Somehow vaguely it's related to corruption, although they're not willing to say that he actually stole as much money as like our service and Kloop and the OCCRP were reporting for it. But certainly, you know, if you look at what Japarov has been able to do in a very short time, it's obvious that he's got a lot of money behind him right now. His support, his like close supporters that go with him in places, and when he was just down in the south meeting, they'll have, you know, jackets on that are, you know, designed for, they're all the same color, they say Japarov, you know, on them, everything like that. That's not cheap to get all that kind of stuff. The Kyrgyzstan party did that in the elections in 2015 too, but, you know, I mean, they had to outfit all these people with matching clothing, which they got. Obviously, that makes a big impression on people. It's like living advertisements that are all over the place. Right. So he's clearly got a lot of money behind him. He himself has been pointed out on Twitter, certainly, is wearing fairly expensive clothing. And for a person who was in prison for, you know, 2.5 years before he got sprung on October 5th, you would figure that wasn't just sitting around in a box somewhere at his home. Right. Someone is helping him, and they're spending a lot of money to make over his image and the image of the people around him.
Right. And also, I'm just using this opportunity, you know, speaking of Matt Raimov's, though, Bruce, can I also shamelessly invite you to say a couple of words about the report RFRL has just released in collaboration with the OCCRP, Club News, and Belinkat, which really speaks to Matt Raimov's dark world. And, of course, he was the main player in the last election, as you were talking about. So I thought it might be relevant to remind this report to our audience. So, Bruce, just some highlights from the latest episode of that report.
Yeah, well, you know, like you said, our Kyrgyz service, KLUP, it's a local, it's a media outlet in Kyrgyzstan, the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, and then Bellingcat have been working on this for a couple of years now, you know, and it does highlight the fact that the huge money laundering scheme that has roots in China, or certainly an Uyghur businessman of Chinese origin, you know, that runs through Kyrgyzstan and into Uzbekistan and probably through Kazakhstan too, and good Turkey, United Arab Emirates, all kinds of places where this assets have been acquired with you know, at least $700 million that they've been able to find documents for. The latest one was showing one, the fabulous and luxurious lifestyle that Raim Matrimov's wife is living, has been living for years and years, and other family members, and also his connections to another underworld figure named Kamchi Kobayev, who's also called Koya Kyrgyz. He's currently being held in prison, although it seems like pretty soft conditions for him. But he's been a well-known figure for a long time. But those are some of the latest reports. They kind of look at how this wealth was spread around and who might be involved with Ryan Bekmat-Rahimov. But there's probably more than a dozen reports now that, you know, detail his connections, the network, how it ran, how they got money from Kyrgyzstan to other countries, property that was bought with it, you know, and including an assassination of one of the money couriers, who was also one of the main sources for information on the report.
Right. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, Bruce. I think, Bucket, you want to say something. I will give you a microphone. Just let me say a couple of words in following up, Bruce. So the report is available on our website, as well as the websites of our partners. I would really, really encourage our audience to check out. It's revealing in terms of how this man has made hundreds of millions of dollars, in how he smuggled that money out of the country, and how he continues to use that money to expand his influence. Very, very revealing information there. So, Bucket, very quickly, then we need to move on to the discussion about the referendum.
You know, there is some uncertainty even in all this discussion, as well as many other public debates on this matter, because we don't yet have good answers to the following questions. How these people, leaders, impose their will almost on entire political elite during a very short period of time? And what are the sources or financial sources that they, during a very short period of time, created such impressive political campaign? And that's why I think that Matrimov and the current Kyrgyz troika, as well as a large part of the Kyrgyz elites, are from the same corrupt political environment. And for them, just to use demagoguery, it's so important, because if we see the Kyrgyz society, a majority of electorate is getting more conservative, more traditionalist, more nationalistic and religiously, and that's why they easily will be the prey of this such kind of populist and demagogues.
Right. No, these are very good points. Thank you very much, Bucket. So, very important days ahead in Kyrgyzstan in terms of the elections. But besides election, we are also headed to very, very crucial constitutional referendum. So there's a lot to talk about. Let me leave the election discussion here and to flag an event, public event, that we will be planning in the first week of January to discuss about the elections and some of the ups and downs, some of the leading figures and campaigns. So we hope we will have the chance to cover all the other issues that we could not cover in this discussion. We need to move on to discussion about the constitutional referendum. I guess for me, this is even more important than the election itself, because in some ways, the referendum, which is expected to be, I guess, approved, will change how the system of government will work in Kyrgyzstan, how it's going to look like going forward. So what is really cooking up there, and what all that is going to mean for Kyrgyzstan's political future? Let's continue the debate talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Gulnora Turaliba, member of the opposition political party Birbol. Gulnora is joining us from Bishkek as a political observer. Also from Bishkek is Kasiyet Ismanova, communications chief of a Bishkek-based opinion survey agency, Central Asia Barometer. Bakit Bashimov, professor of global studies and international relations at the Northeastern University. Bakit is formerly a high-profile Kyrgyz politician, and Bruce Spanier, the editor of Radio Free Europe Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Europe Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the implications of upcoming crucial and consequential elections and constitutional referendum in Kyrgyzstan. Welcome back, colleagues. So, about the referendum, let me start with you, Bruce. Could you please remind us what's on the paper, what we are really voting when we vote on this constitutional referendum?
Well, it's changed. First, they had a whole draft new draft constitution they were going to put forward. But that was, there was a lot of changes, a lot of bad changes in that. My understanding is that where we are now is that it's going to be a much simpler vote, where it's going to be, do you approve of a presidential form of government or a parliamentary form of government? So it's more, much more basic question than do you approve on a brand new constitution with all these different features. At least that was my last understanding. This has gone back and forth. There's a constitutional council that's been meeting for weeks trying to figure out what they were going to do about that. So it's been a work in progress, and a lot of work has been going on back and forth. Like I said, my understanding is now that where they are is that they're just going to vote. Do you want a presidential system or do you want a parliamentary system? It'll be real simple.
That's interesting. Bakit, what do you see when people will be voting on January 10th about the constitutional referendum? What is at stake there? Whether it is approved or rejected, I don't expect that to be rejected, but if it is approved, what does it mean really?
I think it will be approved because, a lot of people in Kyrgyzstan asking very simple question, why we live in such a miserable condition? And these leaders offering them very simple, populist answer, because it's a wrong political system. And that's why they just created the atmosphere of nostalgia about the iron hand, about the strong man, importance of a concentration of power, hands of those who will be more responsible than their predecessor. It's a demagoguery. And it's the same vicious circle that started during Akayev's times, continues to Bakiyev, and after that to this is new revolutionaries, Atambayev, who came after 2010, and so on. Same situation. And that's why, I think it will be approved. But as I said, it is vicious circle. And it will be just concentration of power in the hands of a few, Sadir Japarov and the Troika. And after that, we will see in the next few years the same scenario of turmoil, of a conflict between different clans and so on. And after that, again, the regime change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very important points, Bakit. Thank you very much. Gulnora, remember we were talking about this in one of our earlier episodes of Majlis podcast. I'm referring to the way Jabarov is rushing this referendum. I don't recall if there was any proper or detailed discussion on the public level about the articles he's proposing to be changed. I don't also recall any vetting process might have taken place. I don't recall any parliamentary committees being formed and evaluated all the articles being proposed in this constitutional referendum. That is one thing. The other thing is referendum is taking place at a time when Kyrgyz people are debating about equally major issue, that is about the electing the new president. When I sit back and put myself in the position of a Kyrgyz citizen, I would really get confused about what debate is about what really. So many things are being pulled into very short amount of time. How people are really comprehending the situation?
Yeah, I think that was an idea of him to make people be confused about those things. So I think while people are very much now in the discussion of the candidate themselves, their programs, they don't really pay attention on what is happening in the second ballot, right? So, and as Mr. Bishimov has already mentioned, that it was communicated well in a very, very simple words that if you are for Sadr Japarov, then you are for presidential form. So it's even simpler than the other stage saying that all our problems is because of political system. And I think that there is no proper discussions in the regions. There is no proper discussions in the villages. So it's very basic ones. If you are for this candidate, then you should vote for presidential form of governance. And as for other discussion, they're happening more in Bishkek and in very specific circles, like lawyers, civil society members who are already informed about the consequences of this. There's no public discussions in the parliament. So the law itself was adopted in one day in three readings. So there was no real discussion.
Right. Interesting. Wow. Okay. So, Kasiat, what the numbers say? I mean, what level of awareness or the understanding is there among people on what they are really about to vote on January 10th?
Right now, we don't have such data. It will be released soon on Monday. Among others, we ask people, do they support the holding of the referendum, which kind of form of government they prefer, and also we included a question on the proposed constitutional amendments. For example, introducing a new institution as Kugultai, or prolonging the term of the president and lifting the prohibition to come to service twice. I mean, this kind of questions we asked, and I hope that on Monday we are going to see interesting data on this.
Yeah, leaving data behind, because that's something confidential you cannot speak about today in conclusive format. I mean, you know, if you can share some of the opposing and supporting voices, is there any highlight you could talk about? I mean, the person who is supporting this constitutional reform, why that person is reporting? If someone is opposing, why that person is opposing it?
For this survey, we didn't ask questions like why.
You know, Muhammad, in that situation, I would like to add, you know, of course, surveys and the results of the surveys are very important to understand what's going on in a Kyrgyz society. But we just made a preliminary analysis of the parliamentary election, last one. Right. And again, we just got enough evidence to make the following conclusion. Number one, populism plays a key role. That's very important. Second one, election on a local level is a trade between local communities and the politicians. The upcoming election will be the same picture. For instance, the supporters of Sadr Japarov will go to the villages, to the provinces, to the cities, and they will meet with the leaders of the local communities. And of course, they offer them promises, some very material products, and of course, money. And people just not reasonably thinking about the form of a governance and so on. They are just following the promises, and they will decide. And after that, just returning to the Issyk-Kul region about which we already discussed. You know, Issyk-Kul province and Osh city is under the control of criminals. And that's why for Sadr Japarov, it's not necessary just to instruct someone to do something against Madumarov. It's just local criminal people do that things, because it's in their interest to continue to control financial streams and to continue to get profits. That's why I'm saying, but amnesty of capital announced by Sadr Japarov 1.5 months ago, it is about asking them to contribute to his campaign, to their presidential campaign, and after that to determine financial outcomes of upcoming parliamentarian elections.
Yeah, your point was referring to the earlier discussions that we had about Madamarov's claim that his supporters were threatened. Yeah, I think we also need to be wrapping up the discussion very soon here. Just a couple of last points. Maybe let me start with you, Bruce. So Bakit is saying that, you know, there is no reason to think that this proposal will be rejected, so it will be approved. If it is approved, what does this really going to mean to the future of the Kyrgyz government, the future structure of the Kyrgyz government?
And I agree that it'll probably pass. You know, it's really strange. I hate to make big generalities, but I can't remember any referendum anywhere in Central Asia that didn't pass. So if they're going to but like I said, this is a choice, supposedly. You know, you can say parliamentary or presidential. Now we figure that it'll probably go presidential. Then we go back to what the drafts of that constitution look like, which would effectively make whoever the president is, and we assume it's going to be Japarov, the head of state and the head of government at the same time, with the power to appoint pretty much all the officials. The curl tie would be useful to propose dismissals, you know, but so it changes the whole form of government. It changes it into a totally different, you could say it's an authoritarian government, although we know that actually Japarov is working with other people. So it would be a group of people, you know, that would be running, very small group of people that would be running the country. Now, I don't know, the last couple of presidents have been pretty bad, you'd have to say, the weak anyway. You know, they really didn't push a lot of changes. That kind of paved the way for what's coming, for what's happening right now. But still, if they decide to change the system back and make it a strong presidential government, I don't think that any government's in a position where it could solve the major problems in the country at the moment, which are the health crisis and the economy. It is what it is. Right. And it doesn't matter who's there and what you're going to try to do. I don't see how they can make a lot of difference. Internationally, it'll be a disaster, at least for their relations with Western countries, because a lot of these, certainly European Union countries and even the United States, have backed the parliamentary system that held Kyrgyzstan up as a model for other countries in the region. And so if they vote for a presidential system and the system they have is based on the constitution, like the drafts that we've seen, it makes Kyrgyzstan effectively Tajikistan without a border with Afghanistan. They would lose a lot of international support. That said, Bakit made a good point, you know, that these things turn around in Kyrgyzstan. The Kyrgyz people don't have unlimited patience. I don't see how this group that's governing the country can last that long. But like I said, they could do a lot of short-term damage by making it into a real authoritarian system. They would lose a lot of the support they're getting, certainly from democratic countries.
Right. Yeah.
And Mohammad, may I? I like very much what Bruce said. And, you know, we see the Kyrgyz dilemma, large Kyrgyz dilemma. People would like to live better. At the same time, they would like to just preserve the traditionalist conservative society. It is impossible. It is very important to be the modern society. And that's why we can see this kind of fundamental conflict between two choices. It is important to make choice. But I think this time, unfortunately, Kyrgyz population will make a wrong choice. And sadly, as Bruce said, Kyrgyzstan police just show into the entire world and the region how not to do things in development.
Right. Thank you, Bakit. That was very important, rather a conclusive thoughts we could wrap up our discussion with. But let me end the conversation with brief comments by both Gulnara and Kasiyet. What we have, like 3 weeks until the elections, so during this time, Gulnara, what you will be watching at on how things will develop until the elections day? I mean, where your eyes will be to determine what kind of election day are we going to see, or what kind of post-election day we are going to witness?
I think that the presidential elections historically in Kyrgyzstan are calmer. They are not so turbulent as parliamentary ones. So I think that we will have a more or less stable event on 10th of January. And I don't expect any surprise. And I will more observe afterwards. So I think that the next 8-9 months will be very challenging for the new president. And parliamentary elections will bring another turbulent time in Kyrgyzstan. But of course, we all have hope that all the lessons were really learned, and now we will have another pass. So there is a hope among Kyrgyz people, we'll see, and it of course depends most on the public administration reform and on the team of the new president.
Okay, Kasiyet, is there anything you would like to add in terms of your future perspective? What are the areas you will be watching as a researcher, as a public survey opinion person?
On the election day, we are going to closely look how our public opinion survey results correspond to the actual election results.
Right. Okay, with this, I think we need to wrap up the discussion. Thank you very much, Kasiyet Ismanova, Communications Chief of a Bishkek-based opinion survey agency, Central Asia Barometer. Also, big thanks goes to Gulnara Turaliba, member of the opposition political party Birbol, Bakit Bashimov, professor of global studies and international relations at the Northeastern University, and Bruce Spanier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us today. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberties Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C.